I'm Jack Armstrong. He's Joe Getty. We're the Armstrong and Getty Show.
We cover the stories the mainstream media ignores.
Stories that are important to your life and important to the world.
The election, of course.
The many trials of Donald Trump.
Couple of wars.
Gender-bending madness.
Why are kids looking at so much social media?
And we bring you the stories the mainstream media is on.
But we do it without the left-wing media spin.
Listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Open your free iHeart app and search the Armstrong and Getty Show to start listening.
More Than a Movie is back with Season 2. I'm your host, Alex Fumero. And each week, I'm going to talk to the people behind your favorite movies. From The Godfather, Andy Garcia.
He has the smarts of Vito, the temper of Sonny, the warmth of Fredo, and the coldness of Michael.
To the legend behind La Bamba, Lou Diamond Phillips.
When I walked in, I didn't think I had a shot at Richie because John Stamos's picture was already up on the wall.
Listen to More Than a Movie on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, I'm Michael Rappaport.
And I'm Kibi Rappaport.
And together we're hosting Rappaport's Reality Podcast.
We have a passion for reality TV, and we're inviting you into our living room.
We're dissecting the drama, and we're giving praise to the single greatest form of entertainment on television today. That is right. Reality TV is the greatest form of entertainment on television today. Listen to Rappaport's Reality starting May 8th on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is 24, a weekly highlight reel from the Clay Travis and Buck Sexton Show, featuring all things election coverage. Let's get started. Here are Clay and Buck.
This morning, Buck, I was listening and reading about that argument. I don't think this is going to be close. I think it's going to be at least 6-3 that they cannot use these statutes, and it may go all the way out to potentially some of the liberal justices as well, who have evinced a great deal of skepticism also. We'll get Julie Kelly's read. Have you seen this? I mean, I think if they were to go 7-2 or something in that magnitude to strike this down, it would be a huge blow to Jack Smith and all of the Democrats that have tried to use this January 6th statute.
Well, I also think that it goes into a larger framework, a bigger it's evidence in a bigger trial, if you will, that how many times can they try to use the law against Trump and they have to get slapped down? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Look at all the different prosecutors, all the different efforts to destroy Trump that we are finding the system itself is saying is outrageous, meaning they've tried to abuse the system to destroy Trump. And then people have had to step in at the Supreme Court level, for example, and say, guys, what are you doing? That's not constitutional. That's not lawful. And the best example is the 9-0 of what Colorado was trying to do. And then Maine dabbled in for a second of removing Trump from the ballot. To be very clear, the most left wing justices, I think, in the history of the Supreme Court. OK, and certainly the most among the most anti-Trump judges you'll find anywhere went along with the majority. And they said, guys, you can't just say we think he did a thing that hasn't been proven in court and we're going to remove him from the ballot and he can't be president. You can't do that, right? I mean, you're effectively overriding federal elections. Clay, if this happens now, to your point about the Supreme Court argument this morning, if that gets struck down, they will have abused another statute to pile up against not just Trump, but his supporters. Their abuse isn't just a matter of opinion. Their abuse of the law is becoming increasingly a matter of fact over and over again.
And this is also important. They are trying now. This has just happened. The prosecutors have filed a motion to hold Trump in contempt for violating the gag order that was put in place for him in the Manhattan criminal trial. Trump has already weighed in this morning, and I listened and I was like, wow, this is what he said outside of the courtroom as he entered this morning. So this is a couple of hours ago, I think, now. Listen.
We have a judge who shouldn't be on this case. He's totally conflicted, but this is a trial that should never happen. It should have been thrown out a long time ago. If you look at Jonathan Turley, Andy McCarthy, all great legal scholars, there's not one that we've been able to find that said this should be a trial. I should be right now in Pennsylvania, in Florida, in many other states, North Carolina, Georgia campaigning. This is all coming from the Biden White House because the guy can't put two sentences together. He can't campaign. They're using this in order to try and win an election, and it's not working that way. It's working the opposite way.
Okay, so that is Trump this morning. He also posted on Truth right before he went into the courtroom, Buck. This conflicted Trump-hating judge won't let me respond to people that are on TV lying and spewing hate all day long. He's running roughshod over my lawyers and legal team. The New York system of, quotation marks, justice is being decimated by critics from all over the world. I want to speak or at least be able to respond. Election interference, rigged unconstitutional trial, take off the gag order. Now, Buck, here's my question for you. Are they going to put him in jail over this? Because I think that's where this is headed. I think this judge wants Trump in jail for contempt, and I don't think it's crazy to think it's going to happen. I think Trump may want it to happen.
Well, this is there are some parts of this that are legal analysis and parts of this that become very obviously political analysis, and I know they're intertwined as well. I know we get this question all the time, and it's funny because I don't know anybody who has an answer to it. How do you incarcerate somebody who has lifetime 24/7 Secret Service protection?
We started asking this years ago.
We've been looking at this for a long time. Now, there is precedent for taking a person and putting them in, I think they call it administrative segregation, where, you know, for example, if a cop gets put in like state prison, they sometimes will move because, you know, maybe
they
there
need
are
protective
people that,
custody, basically, protective from custody, the other right. Members of the jail.
Yeah. And you could do something like that, but you would have to have Secret Service. Like, I think Trump might. I understand this is crazy. Can I just preface this? I know what we're saying here is crazy, but we're in a crazy time, everyone. I think there is a situation where maybe they would, because if they hold them in contempt, what is it going to be, 48 hours or something, right?
Get him in cuffs and they walk, they perp walk.
Well, that's
him.
What I'm saying.
That's the question.
They want to break the seal. They want to establish, just like, remember, the Bragg trial was the first one to bring an indictment, which I always thought was significant because, yeah, it was flimsy, but they knew that there was no process by which it would likely be overturned or stopped in New York. So they wanted to set the precedent, and all the elements came in. Clay, I think they could put him, they think they could end up putting him in an administrative, by the way, if we have somebody from like Bureau of Prisons or, you know, New York State Bureau of Prisons or just in general, let us know if you think there is some precedent. My sense is they would have to shut down like a wing of a holding facility. And then there'd have to be Secret Service there to protect him, but he'd have to be inside of a cell for a couple of days. And that's what they would. They can't. I don't think that. I mean, the New York State can't say you no longer have Secret Service protection. They can't do that.
Okay, so that leads to which is crazy. There aren't a lot of precedents for this. Okay,
wait,
so
hold on.
That leads.
There's no precedent,
yeah,
right? There's no.
But
precedent.
I mean, there are precedents for famous people being held in contempt of court. Never someone with Secret Service protection that
never
I'm aware
of. Former and likely future president of the United States, though.
So here is my question for you, then, as a part of that: is this Trump? As I've used this analogy because I remember growing up watching it. Do you know Brer Rabbit at all, Buck? Do you remember the Brer Rabbit stories?
No,
okay.
We should have. I don't know what you're talking about.
I don't know what percentage of people out there will remember this. I'm in Georgia, by the way, which is where I think the Joel Chandler Harris Brer Rabbit stories originated. They were later made into cartoons, all this stuff. Brer Rabbit, and before they decided that Splash Mountain was racist at Disney World, Brer Rabbit was the star of Splash Mountain, if any of you have been on the Splash Mountain ride at Disney. Okay. Brer Rabbit would always say, don't throw me in the briar patch. Whatever you do, don't throw me in the briar patch. Is Donald Trump daring Marchand, this judge, as well as the larger Democrat Party apparatus, to put him in jail? Because in the same way that the mugshot was a huge benefit to Trump, is him getting put in jail for contempt of court a huge political win for him? Leave aside the legal for right now.
I do think so, especially on this, because even people who are casual observers of the news, which is most people, because most people are, you know, we have a hyper attuned and informed audience. Most of America, as much as I love America, people have other things to do than watch the news. Even if you or watch much of the news, and they get their news from bad places in a lot of contexts too. I think that that Donald Trump in a cell, the reason being he was held in contempt by a judge, the reason being he's speaking out against a trial that has to do with a business administrative accounting error. That's right. All this is. That is what we're talking about here. I think that any normal person who has not been just steeped in Trump derangement syndrome would say to that, we can't have this in our country. And I think that's why the polls are all showing what they're showing right now, Clay. That's the truth.
Yeah, and this is why, I mean, look, things cut through. I think what you said is a good point. What percentage of people do you think have seen the Trump mugshot photo? What percentage of American voters? 100%? I think it's almost impossible that you would not have seen the Trump mugshot picture, even if you're not paying attention to the news on a day-to-day basis.
You mean, I think if you could name the current vice president, you've seen the mugshot photo. You know what I mean? Like, I think if you have any familiarity with Paul, you think even more than that?
Photo than can name the vice president. I think it's almost 100% of voters would have seen that photo. My point is, almost 100% of voters, and I'm saying voters because, you know, 40% of people are not voting. I think almost 100% of voters will see if Trump is arrested. They may not pay attention to the results of the trial. They may not be following on a day-to-day basis like we are. And to me, I think it's highly likely that it would work to his favor. And I wonder how much political calculus, in the same way we've talked for a long time now, ever since the raid on Mar-a-Lago in, what, August of 22, we have said there's a two-tier story here, the legal and the political, and they're intertwined in a way that we've never seen before. Something can be smart legally and really poor decision politically, and vice versa.
And also, I think something to remember about where the Democrats are and the anti-Trump machinery, they thought all along that these trials, that these prosecutions would destroy Donald Trump. They have no choice but to see all of this through. To withdraw all of it at this point, or to withdraw the efforts to say, all right, you know, the election's coming up, we're going to defer or delay, would be essentially to admit that they had made some political calculation error. So they have to go all the way with this. And I think that in New York, what you're seeing is if they brought this trial, and I'm going to say, I mean, they did this to Trump's corporation accountant, Alan Weisselberg, who's gone to prison. And they just sent Peter Navarro to prison. He's serving a sentence right now for not testifying to Congress because he's associated with Trump. If they did this to anyone, Clay, it would be an outrage that they're doing it to the person who is leading in the presidential nomination contest right now, according to every single polling company in the United States. It's outrageous beyond words. But they have, what are they going to do? They won't stop. So they're going to see this all the way through. I don't see a way around it. I mean, I think that and locking Trump up, please, if you worked in prisons and you have some idea of how they could do this, I don't even, you know, what would they do? How would this go? Let us know, because I'd be very curious to hear it. I think the only answer is they would have to have the Secret Service come in, clear a wing, shut down the wing. And it would almost be like, you remember when Pablo Escobar got to build his own prison? Kind of be a little bit like that. Because, like, your guys would be running the thing, and nobody would really be, and I don't know.
Also, Buck, he has to be in court. So I don't even know how they can jail him, because the judge has already said that he has to be present in court, even if it means that he misses his son's graduation, potentially. So if he gets put in court, it further delays the process of the trial. I mean, gets put in jail, it further delays the process of the trial. I don't even know. I this is fascinating. I don't even know how this plays out. But yeah, to your point, 800-282-2882, if you have some theory based on your knowledge of the New York court system, what this would be like or how it would work, I would actually be fascinated to hear.
Yeah, we're going to dive into this. And I think, It's going to, the thing is, I just want to prepare all of you. It's going to get crazier. It's going to get crazier. We have not seen peak crazy
yet.
We're just
touching the tip of the iceberg right now of the crazy that's coming.
That is correct, yes. Why are people still on the fence about owning gold and silver? I just don't understand.
Have we already forgotten about regional bank closures, inflation, global instability, and the potential for serious world conflicts?
You can look to precious metals for various reasons. One, having tangible currency on hand as part of your bug out plan. Two, diversifying your portfolio as a hedge against inflation. And three, historically, gold increases in value over time.
You keep yourself informed about global events. You see the increase in conflicts around the globe. Countries are buying and hoarding massive amounts of gold. Why aren't you? It's time to pull the trigger with the Oxford Gold Group and buy gold and silver. Nobody can predict the future, but we can't put our head in the sand either.
The people with Oxford Gold Group are real pros. They make owning gold and silver simple and easy to understand. Call Oxford Gold Group right now, and you may qualify for up to $10,000 in free precious metals.
Call 833-995-GOLD. That's 833-995-GOLD. One more time, 833-995-G-O-L-D.
I'm Jack Armstrong. He's Joe Getty. We're the Armstrong and Getty Show.
We cover the stories the mainstream media ignores.
Stories that are important to your life and important to the world.
The election, of course.
The many trials of Donald Trump.
Couple of wars.
Gender-bending madness.
Why are kids looking at so much social media?
And we bring you the stories the mainstream media is on.
But we do it without the left-wing media spin.
Listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Open your free iHeart app and search the Armstrong and Getty Show to start listening.
More Than a Movie is back with season two of the award-winning film podcast, and this time with a lot more movies. I'm your host, Alex Fumero, and each week I'm going to talk to the people behind some of my favorite movies. From The Godfather, Andy Garcia.
He has the smarts of Vito, the temper of Sonny, the warmth of Fredo, and the coldness of Michael.
To the OG spy kid, Alexa Penavega.
You had Carlo Gugino, who's the coolest mom ever. You had Antonio, who's handsome, amazing, charismatic. And then Carmen and Juni. I felt like a lot of other kids felt like this could be me.
To the legend behind La Bamba, Lou Diamond Phillips.
When I walked in, I didn't think I had a shot at Richie because John Stamos's picture was already up on the wall.
Every episode will feature interviews with the biggest actors, directors, writers, and producers behind your favorite films and tap into the history of Latinos in film. Listen to More Than a Movie as part of the My Cultura Podcast Network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to 24, the Year of Impact, with Clay and Buck.
I think Trump is going to win Georgia by 8 points. I don't think it's going to be close. I think it's going to be like...
I'm putting it on the prediction board.
Put it on the projection screen. 8 points. I think 7 or 8 points. I think it's going to be a very comfortable win in Georgia. Of all the states, if you had to ask me, which state is most likely to flip from 2020, either in favor of Democrats or in favor of Republicans, I think Georgia is going to be back in red camp. And I actually think you're going to start to see Biden spending less time and money in Georgia because the numbers out there are really bad for them in Georgia. The most recent poll has Trump up 10 in Georgia. There is no Senate race. There is no governor's race. There's nothing to motivate in-state voters for Democrats in any kind of substantial way. And you'll recall in 2022, basically every statewide candidate, except Herschel Walker, won by 7 or 8 points. So it wasn't just that they won. It was despite the fact that Stacey Abrams, I believe, outspent Brian Kemp, and they had a close race in 2018. He trounced her in 2022. So I appreciate the ATL for taking care of me. I'm going to be down here again in June to watch the Atlanta Braves with my kids. I can't wait. We got a great affiliate again. News Talk Extra 106.3 FM. We appreciate all of you out there listening in Atlanta. And then, Buck, I'm headed to Seattle, which is crazy town. I'm going to be speaking at a Hillsdale College event that they are doing in Seattle. So I'm going to get on, I don't know, a midnight flight basically and fly all the way to the West Coast, and I'll be doing the show Wednesday and Thursday from there. So anyway, we'll see how I do in crazy town I haven't been to Seattle since everything fell apart with Chaz. Remember that? Like the autonomous region and everything. I mean, even for 2020 standards of crazy, people looked at Seattle, Portland, and San Francisco and said, you guys are crazy. The standard for crazy was high. Seattle, Portland, and San Francisco all exceeded it by massive amounts. So we'll see what it looks like. I haven't been to the city since, like I said, I think it was like 2018, 2019 that I was in Seattle. Beautiful place filled with a lot of crazy leftists. So we'll see how I do there. But two major legal issues that are unfolding. You just heard us talk with Julie Kelly. The analysis of whether the Jan 6 political persecutions, because I do think persecution and prosecution are intertwined in many ways here, are permissible or not under the Sarbanes-Oxley obstruction of an official proceeding standard, it seems likely that many of those convictions are going to get struck down. Maybe it'll be 5-4, maybe it'll be 6-3, maybe even get a liberal to come on, but that would come out in June. It would be a huge story because it implicates half of Jack Smith's case in Washington, D.C. It would also be a huge story, as you just heard us talking, because for years, leftists have been saying, oh, these Jan 6 insurrection cases, they're 100% legally permissible. They're necessary. We have to hold everybody accountable. What you're probably likely to hear is that there was major prosecutorial overreach. Simultaneously, they are trying to hold Trump in contempt of court in New York City, where day two of his criminal trial in the Alvin Bragg case is underway. And what we have been talking about, I think fairly on this show, Buck, since August of 22, when the Mar-a-Lago raid basically kicked into high gear the way that Merrick Garland and the Department of Justice were going to all come after Donald Trump. How is this playing in the larger political arena? What would happen if Trump got arrested? How would they even handle it? These are things that are truly unprecedented that we are continuing to break down.
Yeah, I think anybody who tells you they know where all this is going is making that up. It's just not possible. Did you want to get to the Stephen A. Smith clip?
Yeah, I want to play this because I would argue that Stephen A. Smith, very middle-of-the-road guy, he's not a politically, from ESPN, he's going to come on the show. We're going to get him on somewhat soon. He's being more outspoken on a variety of different areas. I've done his podcast a couple of times. We had interesting conversations. But he had this to say yesterday. We've talked a lot about black men and the possibility that if you look at the polling from Wall Street Journal, maybe 30% of black men are willing to support Trump. Here's what Stephen A. Smith had to say about the cases in his hometown of New York City.
To my liberal friends out there, all you're doing is showing that you're scared you can't beat him on the issues and the merits. That's why he keeps saying it's a political campaign against me. That's why he keeps saying they can't beat me at the election, at the polls. This is the only way they could do it. And if you don't put him in jail and he still goes from being the presumptive GOP nominee to the official GOP nominee and he goes to the polls, even though he was going to whine about winning and being rigged again, you have given more fodder to that argument, which means we'll never have peace in this country because tens of millions of people see what extent the other side is willing to go through just to keep him out of office because they can't beat him on their own merits.
I do think this is a fundamental point. I mean, this is a central point of everything that we're talking about here. If what Trump did is so bad, and if it's so clear he's so awful, why is he ahead in the polls, and why are they so scared of what's going to happen in the fall? And they don't have an answer for that. And they won't process it, they won't think it through, but I think Stephen A. hits right into the center of it. It's something we've discussed here many times. The best way for there to be a referendum on Trump's behavior, whether just talking about his 4 years as president, or what you think about whether that should change because of January 6th, this is ultimately the most clear political question, right? This is about who should lead the nation according to the vote of the American people. Let the people have their say. All these efforts that they have are meant to either stop Trump entirely now. And look, he's clearly the nominee. It's not about just having him win the primary anymore, if it ever was. It's to stop him from being able to run entirely, or Now I think this is what they've shifted gears toward. Just make it so it's really hard for him to win as he's running, but not based upon what people want, based upon the fact that they are rigging the system. I mean, they're rigging the election. Even if Trump wins, it will be an election that is rigged against him just based upon these legal challenges. And they can't come up with an answer. If Trump is so bad, why are you terrified that the American people are going to vote for him over Joe Biden? Like, what is the response to that? After 4 years of Trump and 4 years of Biden, Americans of voting age are likely to say, based on what we see right now, yeah, I want Trump to be president again.
It's not even just that, too, Buck. It's that they're only even willing, by and large, to bring charges in juries that are rigged in their favor. That is, political locales that overwhelmingly favor Democrats. So that's why I think one of the most difficult, and I think Stephen A. hit on it, we've been hitting on this quite a lot, that's why I think one of the most difficult questions to answer is not only why are you trying to keep him from running, why are you trying to put him in prison, it's also why are you doing these charges, why are you bringing them entirely in a jury rig to a large extent process? Because I'm not, we said this earlier, if you told me, hey, it's a 50-50 America, which I think it's fair to say that roughly it is, like everybody out there listening would have to agree. If you told me that they were going to try to bring charges against Trump to put him in prison for the rest of his life, I would still think it's an awful precedent to set in the United States, because sooner or later, somebody else will also have the same result that Trump has now. Somebody else is going to get charged as a method of lawfare. But at least if you allowed the jury to be in a jurisdiction that's 50-50, I would say, okay, like, let's see how it actually plays out. Which is why South Florida, I'm not that nervous about South Florida. I don't think that there will be a jury that is overwhelmingly made up of Trump haters. I think there's going to be a jury in New York City that, just based on the numbers, is likely to be made up of Trump haters. And I don't think it's crazy to think that there are going to be people that want to see Trump put in prison for the rest of his life that are a part of this jury pool. Now, maybe some of them will say, hey, you know what? I can't fairly and impartially render justice. We already saw that happen a little bit. They'll step out. I think there's other people that will be happy to be on this jury because they want to hold Trump responsible. They want to be the deciders. And I look at this and I say, fundamentally, we can have 150 million people render a verdict on Trump's behavior, on Trump's whether or not he's able to be president, or we can have 12 in a incredibly biased jurisdiction. And to me, the 150 million is the answer. No matter how much you trust juries, do you want 12 people trying to decide who can be president, or do you want 150 million?
It does go to the ultimate point, I think, about the mental instability of many of the Democrats that are pushing for this, or the emotional and ideological surrender that they've had, right? They just, whatever the anti-Trumpism demands, they will go for. I mean, the fact that Alvin Bragg has turned that one preposterous charge, it's worth everybody knowing, you know, or keeping this in mind. I think it's 34, right? It's a 34 felony count indictment. It was one thing we're talking about, and he's charging it 34 times, which is specifically against prosecutorial guidelines. You're not supposed to, you know, if someone hands you drugs, and then you say, hold on, I'm tying my shoe, and you hand it back to them, and then they hand the drugs back to you, you know, you don't charge these as separate drug possession crimes, right? You're not supposed to do that because it's obviously unjust. That's exactly what Alvin Bragg is doing. He's saying, oh, well, they like Xeroxed it or they emailed it or whatever, that every time we're going to charge that as an additional felony. And you have to wonder that any Democrat who supports the prosecution going on in New York City is also telling you that in America today, it would be more just, not preferable for, you know, what you think the politics of the country should be. It would be more just for Donald Trump to be in prison for years and not be able to run. Although I think he would still run from prison. That's a whole other conversation. That's insane. But it'd be more just for Donald Trump to sit in a prison cell over a clerical error, over a Stormy Daniels payoff or whatever, hush money or whatever they're calling it, than it would to just allow the American people to say, do I or do I not want Donald Trump to be president for four more years? That's it. That's insane. I mean, this is the decision that we're being faced with as a country, or rather the decision they want to deny us as a country based upon what exactly? And the moment you dig into it, Clay, it's all just so flimsy and underhanded.
It's 100% what it is. And I wonder how many people that are in general not paying that much attention are ultimately coming to that same conclusion. If the guy's so bad, how come they can't just let everybody go vote? Let the American people decide whether Trump is able to or not able to be the next president of the United States. That's how democracy works.
You're listening to 24, the most important year in politics, with Clay Travis and Buck Sexton.
Yesterday, when we finished the show, there had been two jurors removed from the Trump jury, and I said that it felt like things were spiraling out of control there. Then, after we got off the air, they had a rapid level of success, and they managed to seat all of the new jury here. So we now have, I believe the number is 12 jurors seated, one alternate, in the Trump criminal trial. They are on track, they say, to start this trial on Monday. Court is taking place today. They are trying to get more alternates seated, up to six total alternates. But those alternate jurors would be in the courtroom and they would be watching, but they would only have a say in the outcome of the case if other jurors, that is the 12 initially seated jurors, were forced out. And we now have pretty good biographical descriptions of all of the jurors in this case. And I wanted to walk through them with you, as Buck and I did when there were seven seated. A big part of how a case is going to go, particularly one like this, where we know there is a rigged jury that is likely to be very much in favor of Alvin Bragg, the state of New York, and opposed to Donald Trump. I want to run through what we know about the 12 jurors that have been seated at this point in time. And I'm reading from the New York Times. Juror number one works in sales, lives in West Harlem. This is our Irish buddy. He said he enjoys outdoor activities, gets his news from the New York Times, watches Fox News and MSNBC, which I'm sorry, sounds like you're lying to me if you say you watch Fox News and MSNBC, unless you're me or Buck, and your job is to analyze the media. I don't think there are actually very many people who watch both of those. He said he's heard about some of former President Donald Trump's other criminal cases, but didn't have an opinion about him. Juror one's going to vote to convict. Okay? Just based on this biographical sketch, Irish guy who lives in Harlem claims that he gets his news from Fox News and MSNBC. I'm sorry, this guy hates Trump. He's going to vote to convict. This is my analysis, by the way. People out there are going to say, Clay Travis told you exactly what all the juror members are going to do. He's jury tampering again. Put him in handcuffs. Put him in prison. So far, I've not been arrested. Trust me, you'll know if I am arrested. This is my opinion, analyzing based on the biographical information provided by the New York Times, which is where I'm reading this from. Juror 2 works in finance, lives in Hell's Kitchen. He said he likes hiking, music concerts, and enjoying New York City. He said he follows Mr. Trump's former fixer, Michael Cohen, on social media, but he also said he follows figures like Kellyanne Conway. He said he believed Mr. Trump had done some good for the country, adding, it goes both ways. I'm sorry. If you follow Michael Cohen on Twitter, you hate Trump. This guy is not voting that Trump is not guilty. I'm sorry. You follow Michael Cohen, that should be a strike to me. This feels like the first two guys here are definitely likely to vote that Trump is guilty. Juror 3 works in the legal field, lives in Chelsea, said he doesn't follow the news, but when he does, he reads the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal, and finds articles using Google.
He said he was not very familiar with Mr. Trump's other criminal cases. Again, this is a guilty verdict. I think we got three bad jurors for Trump so far. Juror four, engineer from the Upper West Side, asked how he was during jury selection. He responded, "I'm freezing." When a lawyer asked if he had strong feelings about Mr. Trump, he responded, "No, not really." Now, evidently, the courtroom has really been cold. So that's kind of a funny answer, as you kind of break down here. But I don't buy into the idea that anybody sitting in a jury pool in Manhattan doesn't have strong feelings about Trump. When you say, "No, not really," it feels to me like you're covering things up. Juror 5 works in education and is from Harlem. She said she tries to avoid political conversations, doesn't care for news. She said she appreciates Mr. Trump's candor. President Trump speaks his mind. I would rather that in a person than someone who's in office and you don't know what they're doing behind the scenes. Black woman in education from Harlem. She is not voting not guilty. I'm sorry. Juror 6 works in technology, lives in Chelsea, gets her news from the New York Times, Google, Facebook, and TikTok. Oh, God. She said she probably has different beliefs than Mr. Trump, but, quote, "This is a free country." Young woman gets her information from TikTok, disagrees with Trump, but believes it's a free country, lives in Chelsea. I think we're 0 for 6, guys. First six jurors, I think we are 0 for 6. Now, let me bring in producer Allie, who didn't know I was going to pull her up here. But you live in New York City. You've lived in New York City for a long time. Is there anything in these first six jurors' biographical details that you think I'm missing? Or as they are being described and as I am reading them to you from the New York Times, are you with me that this does not sound like a very favorable jury pool to Trump?
Absolutely not. And having just done jury duty myself, like 2 months ago, I don't have a good feeling about this at all. No.
And there's nothing that is from these first six jurors that, as someone living in New York City, would make you think for a moment, just based on the neighborhoods or any of these descriptions, oh, that could be favorable.
No, absolutely not.
Okay, this is not good. All right, so that's the first six. I'm going to hit you the next six in a minute here. But I want to tell you a story, too. Allie just said she had done jury duty recently. I do think there's a significant factor here that I'm going to discuss in a little bit. It is there are two lawyers that have been seated on this jury pool. And they weren't stricken. You have the ability as the defense or the prosecution to just strike jurors that you think are going to be uniquely disfavorable to you. And I have been on jury duty only once in my life. I've only been called once. And it was a mall Santa dispute. Guy was a mall Santa, and somehow he had gotten into a contract dispute. I mean, he legitimately looked like Santa Claus sitting at the plaintiff table. He was suing, I think it was a mall, over a contract dispute when he was playing Santa Claus in the mall. Sorry, this was not the real Santa Claus for the kids out there that are in the car. Santa Claus was not on trial. Not the real Santa Claus. This was a pretend Santa Claus. And so pretend Santa Claus is there. And I actually got seated in the jury, in the jury seating area. I was going to be on this jury. And then by mutual agreement, the plaintiff and defense lawyer recognized me because at the time I was doing sports talk radio. And they both said they liked listening to the radio show. So by mutual agreement, they were going to allow me to not have to serve on the jury so they could listen to me talk about sports. This is all 100% true. That's the only time I've ever been called and actually been into a courtroom. I thought I would get knocked and taken off because I am a lawyer. They didn't do that. They took me off because I happened to do radio. It's very strange. I would say incredibly rare
when I come back, I'm going to go through the other six jurors. This almost never happens that you would have two lawyers sitting on a trial. Usually they get knocked off this the trial. Super fascinating. Big gamble, I would say, from both sides to allow this guy to continue. And so I think this is very, very interesting to contemplate. Rolling through the jury that the first six I said is not good. I'm struggling to find any positivity here. Juror 7 works in the legal field, lives on the Upper East Side. He said he's aware of Mr. Trump's other cases, doesn't have an opinion about his character. Said he had political views on the Trump presidency, agreeing with some policies and disagreeing with others. Again, not a big fan of juror number 7 either. And I think to the extent that I'm talking about the fact that there are two lawyers on this case, if you're a lawyer in New York City, I think the political pressure on you to vote to convict is going to be off the charts. Because there are very few lawyers who work in law firms that would even represent Trump. His defense attorney had to leave a big law firm because they were so angry at the fact that he was willing to represent Trump. This is a big issue in the law that doesn't get a lot of attention. How woke law firms have become is off the charts. There are diversity quotas in terms of the lawyers who represent companies now. You don't hear a lot of discussion about this. A lot of law firms require diverse representation now, and or the clients require it. They don't require the best lawyer anymore. They want there to be 20% minority, 35% female representation. It's crazy. As somebody who worked in a law firm and as someone who employs lawyers, I don't care about anything other than, are you the best legal representation that I can afford? It's crazy. Juror 8, Upper East Side, worked in finance, said he reads the New York Times, Wall Street Journal, and watches CNBC and the BBC. He enjoys fly fishing, skiing, and yoga. During jury selection, he said he had no opinions or beliefs that would prevent him from being impartial. Ali, you're the yoga guy. Do you think that anybody that you work out with in doing yoga in Manhattan, other than you, would be willing to vote not guilty for Trump on a criminal trial?
Ooh, that's a tough one, Clay. Is it hot yoga?
Does the yoga matter? Do you think hot yoga or is cold yoga is more likely to be favorable to Trump?
I don't think it's looking good.
Yoga, there are a few hobbies that I see and I say, you are not going to be a Trump person. Yoga is one of them. And I know I'm going to get deluged from all the yoga people who are big Trump people now. You're in a substantial minority, especially if you're in New York City. Okay.
Well, there's New York yoga and then there's yoga in other places that I wouldn't say the same.
Yeah. Like Birmingham, Alabama yoga might be different than New York City yoga, but we're talking about New York City yoga right now.
Absolutely.
Juror 9, works in education from the Upper East Side. She said of Trump, he was our president. Everybody knows who he is. Adding that when he was in office, everyone was kind of talking about politics. Yeah, that's a guilty. I mean, this is not a good jury. Juror 10, businessman who lives in Murray Hill. Allie, where's Murray Hill? What does that tell us?
Actually, that's not far from me in the East Village.
Okay. Said he doesn't follow the news, adding, if anything, it's the New York Times. Said he likes listening to podcasts on behavioral psychology, adding, it's my hobby. Said he does not have a strong opinion on Trump. All right, those are the first 10. I'm not feeling good about any of them. I felt good yesterday a little bit, not anywhere near very optimistic right now. I would love to hear from Trump's defense attorney if he's optimistic about any of these guys, honestly, or gals.
Why are people still on the fence about owning gold and silver? I just don't understand.
Have we already forgotten about regional bank closures, inflation, global instability, and the potential for serious world conflicts?
You can look to precious metals for various reasons. One, having tangible currency on hand as part of your bug out plan. Two, diversifying your portfolio as a hedge against inflation. And three, historically, gold increases in value over time.
You keep yourself informed about global events. You see the increase in conflicts around the globe. Countries are buying and hoarding massive amounts of gold. Why aren't you? It's time to pull the trigger with the Oxford Gold Group and buy gold and silver. Nobody can predict the future, but we can't put our head in the sand either.
The people with Oxford Gold Group are real pros. They make owning gold and silver simple and easy to understand. Call Oxford Gold Group right now, and you may qualify for up to $10,000 in free precious metals.
Call 833-995-GOLD. That's 833-995-GOLD. One more time, 833-995-GOLD.
I'm Jack Armstrong. He's Joe Getty. We're the Armstrong and Getty Show.
We cover the stories the mainstream media ignores.
Stories that are important to your life and important to the world.
The election, of course.
The many trials of Donald Trump.
Couple of wars.
Gender-bending madness.
Why are kids looking at so much social media?
And we bring you the stories the mainstream media is on.
But we do it without the left-wing media spin.
Listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Open your free iHeart app and search the Armstrong and Getty Show to start listening.
More Than a Movie is back with season two of the award-winning film podcast, and this time with a lot more movies. I'm your host, Alex Fumero, and each week I'm going to talk to the people behind some of my favorite movies. From The Godfather, Andy Garcia.
He has the smarts of Vito, the temper of Sonny, the warmth of Fredo, and the coldness of Michael.
To the OG spy kid, Alexa Penavega.
You had Carla Gugino, who's the coolest mom ever. You had Antonio, who's handsome, amazing, charismatic. And then Carmen and Juni. I felt like a lot of other kids felt like this could be me.
To the legend behind La Bamba, Lou Diamond Phillips.
When I walked in, I didn't think I had a shot at Richie because John Stamos's picture was already up on the wall.
Every episode will feature interviews with the biggest actors, directors, writers, and producers behind your favorite films and tap into the history of Latinos in film. Listen to More Than a Movie as part of the My Cultura Podcast Network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to 24, the most important year in politics, with Clay Travis and Buck Sexton.
We bring in now Andy McCarthy, who is, I bet, doing more media than he's ever done in his entire life. Andy, we got seven jurors seated so far. How would you assess the way this trial is going right now? Has anything surprised you? Where are we from your perspective?
The pace of jury selection has really surprised me because you mentioned media. When we were doing it on Monday, I tried to warn people ahead of time that nothing really happens during jury selection. It was, obviously it's historic that it's the first formal day of the trial against the first former president who happens to be the de facto Republican nominee, but nothing much was going to happen and nothing seemed to happen the first day. A few rulings that were interesting, but beyond that, not much. And the estimates, Clay, were that they thought it might take until early May to get a jury because of the glacial pace of Monday. But then the thing picked up like a rocket Tuesday, and they could have a setback tomorrow, but to the extent the judge said he may have a jury fully selected by Friday, that's entirely possible.
Andy, thanks for being with us. We're gonna have to keep you for another segment. We have too many questions, so just get ready for that. But one thing that we've been wondering about, or I've been wondering about particularly, this whole notion of an impartial jury for Trump in New York City on this case. It seems to me like I understand, You go to trial with the justice system you have, and it's kind of like you go to war with the army you have. This is what we got, this trial by jury system, and in general, it's very, very good. But to me, it just seems like a farce. I mean, some of the people that are already, it seems, have been in contention are obviously anti-Trump. Like, how do we get – is that just baked in at this point?
Well, the thing is you're not – the idea is not to get people who all like Trump – or who all like Bragg for that matter, because there's a lot of resentment against Bragg in Manhattan too. A thing to remember about all this is that the movement progressives who vote in elections like the one where Bragg was elected, That's a vanishingly small number of the people in Manhattan. And, you know, they're very motivated, so they kind of punch above their weight. Trump is apt to find a number of really good jurors in Manhattan. I liked trying cases in Manhattan. Now, you know, that was 20 years ago, and we were federal, so we were drawn from the Bronx and Westchester, too. But we had a lot of Manhattan jurors. I thought they were good jurors. The process is supposed to lend itself to a pretty searching examination of these jurors so you can make a discriminating choice about them. There's a lot of latitude to move to remove people by choice. I haven't heard too much complaining that they wanted people removed from cause who the judge refused to remove, which is part of why it's going faster, I think. I think they got rid of a lot of cause objections the first day in one big fell swoop. But also remember, in terms of balance, even if you accept as a premise that Manhattan is cut against Trump, which it clearly is, Trump only needs one, you know, to win here.
Yeah.
Bragg needs 12, and that's a big difference when you have a case like Bragg has, which is a kind of a dog's breakfast of a case.
When we come back, I want to ask you this question, Andy. What would happen if Trump were convicted? What's the process that would play out? Thank you for joining us. You good to come back for one more segment?
Yeah, of course. Uh-huh.
Yep. Yeah, great. Yeah, let's get into that, Clay, because, you know, are they going to lock him up if they can, is really what we want to dive into, and what would that look like, and how would this all work, what the process is. Welcome back in, Clay and Buck. All right, Andy, let's dive right in. We're speaking to Andy McCarthy of National Review and Fox News, 20-plus years, Southern District of New York, prosecutor. Andy, if they find Trump guilty, what do you think happens? I mean, give us the timeline and the possible punishments.
Well, allowing that things are moving a little faster than we thought, and we'll see if that continues. Let's say the trial goes into mid to late May, maybe early June. If he were to get convicted, I think it matters a lot what he gets convicted of, and we can come back around and talk about that. But let's assume, for argument's sake, he gets convicted of one or more felonies in the indictment, which are all the charges of felonies in the indictment. He would have a maximum sentence, as I understand the way New York groups statutory counts, of 4 years. And sentencing is normally about 3 months after a conviction. This is a nonviolent crime. He's a first offender in New York. He should not get a sentence of incarceration. But, you know, if you had asked me about Alan Weisselberg, who Bragg has prosecuted twice in the last 2 years, I would have told you he shouldn't get one either. And they have him in now for, I think, his second 5-month stint at Rikers. So there'll be a lot of pressure from the left, which certainly Bragg and the judge seem to be very keen to put him in prison for some period of time. I think Trump will be able to delay that. And my understanding of the way New York appellate law works is that once he appeals, the sentence can be, you know, any sentence imposed can be frozen until the appeal's done.
And the appeal would take well after the election.
Oh, yeah, it'd be into next year for sure.
And honestly, Andy, this is a crazy question, but given it's a state charge, if he got elected president, how do state charges that have already, and I don't know what the precedent would be here because there's truly never been one. How
right.
do state criminal charges apply to a president of the United States if it was a conviction that occurred prior to his election?
As you say, Clay, the most important thing is that this has never happened before. So, you know, we're kind of spitballing here. But my view would be the Trump Justice Department would argue under the Supremacy Clause that any sentence ought to be postponed until after his term is over. That, in other words, the state can't execute a sentence that would prevent the federal government from doing its ordinary functions. And I kind of doubt that the state would fight that point. I think, you know, what they want here is to get Trump convicted.
You know, look, I've been surprised by a lot of things, but I don't.
Clay, I know you. We got a million. I have to ask this. Is there any chance that they could? Because Andy, what they've done in D.C. is, I call it warp speed, right? Or ludicrous speed. They've moved faster in the J6 trial than all my friends who are federal defense attorneys and federal prosecutors say, like, ever happens. Could they do the sentencing much sooner than 3 months after if he's found guilty?
They could try. I think his lawyers could, tie that up for a while. But I don't really see the big point of doing that, Buck, because, again, the appeal would mean they wouldn't be able to execute the sentence. And what they really, really want is to call him a convicted felon. I think how much he gets sentenced would be beside the point. And it could be scandalous if you put Trump in jail when Bragg is taking serious crimes and turning them into misdemeanors or not charging them at all. That's certainly not going to be helpful to Biden.
Andy, you heard about my the left is fired up at me for my jury tweets and comments that I've made on this show. Do you think that I will be arrested for jury tampering as Eric Swalwell has requested, as Joy Reid and CNN have requested?
Well, I would say no, Clay, but I'm not in New York today, and Alvin Bragg is the DA there, so he's got a different idea when you're on this side of the political aisle than would be the case in the normal case. In all seriousness, I think that what you said is not something I would say, but it's not the crime of jury tampering. It's basically First Amendment free speech. I like the jury system. I'm one of these.
You still have some faith in it, Andy, which I appreciate. I'm not sure I do as much, especially seeing what we're seeing for some of these jurors. But, it's the best thing we got.
Well,
I get it.
Yeah, but one of the things we talked about just probably a month ago was how ridiculous it was that the civil fraud trial was just a bench trial in front of Engoron.
Right.
And I think the only reason for making that point is because it's more fair to have a jury trial. And the implicit in that is that we think that, 12 sensible people are more likely to come to a correct result than one movement progressive. So, I'm still banking on that.
If there were a mistrial, let's say they couldn't get a verdict, there's no way they could get a case rescheduled, right? This would basically be Bragg falling on his face if in some way he doesn't get the felony conviction.
Yeah, I think number one, it'd be ridiculous if he wanted to try it again, because if they don't get him on this, it's going to be because it's a ridiculous case, which Bragg knew in the first place, and that's why he shut it down in 2022. If they don't get a conviction, it's going to be because of things like Michael Cohen, which doesn't get better over time. But the other thing, just to be totally practical about it, is Trump's dance card is going to be filled up with classified information proceedings down in the Florida case. And all of the pretrial stuff in the Washington case, the J6 case, is going to start up again once the Supreme Court rules on immunity. Because when they rule on immunity, assuming they rule against Trump, which I do, then the jurisdiction over the case is going to go back to Judge Chutkan, and she's going to start having hearings and putting the pedal to the metal.
Well, the good news, it sounds like, Andy, neither Trump nor Clay are going to the big house and going to be cellmates, perhaps having to pick who gets top bunk anytime soon.
let's pray for that outcome. I agree with that.
Pray for it. It'll be a hell of a television show.
That's right. Can I just tell you one thing, Andy? When Clay was on, when the heat was turned up on Clay, you know what he said? I'd love to have Andy as my defender. If I did say that.
I would hire you. Might make some money off this before all is said and done.
I might come out of retirement for that case.
There we go. All right, everybody.
I'm Jack Armstrong. He's Joe Getty. We're the Armstrong and Getty Show.
We cover the stories the mainstream media ignores. The
stories that are important to your life and important to the world.
The election, of course.
The many trials of Donald Trump.
Couple of wars.
Gender-bending madness.
Why are kids looking at so much social media?
And we bring you the stories the mainstream media is on.
But we do it without the left-wing media spin.
Listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Open your free iHeart app and search the Armstrong and Getty Show to start listening.
More Than a Movie is back with season 2. I'm your host, Alex Fumero, and each week I'm going to talk to the people behind your favorite movies. From The Godfather, Andy Garcia.
He has the smarts of Vito, the temper of Sonny, the warmth of Fredo, and the coldness of Michael.
To the legend behind La Bamba, Lou Diamond Phillips.
When I walked in, I didn't think I had a shot at Richie because John Stamos's picture was already up on the wall.
Listen to More Than a Movie on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, I'm Michael Rappaport.
And I'm Kibi Rappaport.
And together we're hosting Rappaport's Reality Podcast.
We have a passion for reality TV, and we're inviting you into our living room.
We're dissecting the drama, and we're giving praise to the single greatest form of entertainment on television today. That is right. Reality TV is the greatest form of entertainment on television today. Listen to Rappaport's Reality starting May 8th on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.